You're listening to Am I the Bullcast, the only Magic the Gathering podcast you're listening to right
ever.
Now. Ever.
Ever,
period.
Of all time.
Right now, at the moment. It's me, Mikey C., Mike Carrozza. I'm your host. You know me from EDHREX, Am I the Bullest column. Gee, I wonder if they're related to this podcast. Yes, they are. Don't worry about it. It's all me. And joining me again after some time not joining me because of scheduling stuff and me being out of the city is my co-producer, co-host, sweet angel, super genius, Morgan Sanchez. Hi, Morgan.
What's happening, Mikey? I'm on my sleepy Saturday kick, and I think you are too.
Oh,
sleepy Saturday.
I can see perfectly clear, but I'm looking at my video, and my eyes are barely open.
Yeah.
This is just normal. This is natural for me. It's like my eyes aren't open and I'm seeing, and now I open my eyes wide and that feels wrong. So I'm sleepy too. It's a sleepy Saturday edition of the Bullcast. We got ourselves a mailbag today. Before we dive into the mailbag, we're going to do plugs and sponsors. So let's get into it. As always, our podcast is sponsored by Cardsphere.com. Shout out Cardsphere. Cardsphere, get your cards here. There's a referral link in the description of this episode and on YouTube, on wherever you get your podcasts. Just click on that link, sign up for Cardsphere, and get to trading your cards. Trust me, it is just probably the best way to find cards that you're having a hard time finding, a good way to get some value out of your cards that you want to get rid of but don't want to trade into your LGS because they're not giving you a fair price. You're going to be able to consolidate your collection and add some gems to it just by using Cardsphere.com. Morgan, do you have a Cardsphere story for us?
A lot of gems, that's for sure. I mean, my current wants and haves and buy list are stacked of late. I actually just got rid of a bunch of Tarkir Dragonstorm stuff that I listed the other day because I'm thinking, like, you know, I've had these piles under my desk for about the last 100 years, right? And nobody remembers this ancient set called Tarkir Dragonstorm. So I'm like, oh, these are probably going to sit for a while. Like, you know, this set came out 100 years ago. You know, it's
a real
ancient collector edition stuff.
Point.
Yeah. And it's just all garbage, right? It's just all a bunch of bulk rares. And so I listed up and it's all gone like the next day, dude. I got to go to the post office. I gotta go to the post office
up.
Like today.
Yeah,
all right,
buddy.
On the sleepy Saturday. I'm screwed.
Buddy.
All right. Cardsphere
on
too
the sleepy
good.
Saturday.
All right.
Nuh-uh.
Like, I'm cooked.
Cardsphere so good. That's a good thing. I love that for you, buddy.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I'm glad there are people out there getting
those
cards. And you know what? Can't wait
to
find out what they do with
the
them.
Stack here.
Oh, you got
we're ready to go.
Yeah, you got the letters ready to go, all stamped up and good to go, buddy. Good for you. Yeah, Cardsphere makes it that easy. You put up your cards, someone's going to snap them up. You got to go to the post office, send them away. That's it. Easy peasy. So Cardsphere.com. Cardsphere, get your cards here. Referral link in the description. Don't forget to sign up using that, please. And thank you. And now, some folks, don't get it twisted. We might not mention them every episode, but BoneboxGames.com, discount code BOLCAST, still
yes,
in effect.
Girl.
Get yourself, treat yourself and your favorite deck to some top notch deck boxes. I'm talking so much personality, such good vibes. It's like you got it's like leathery exterior and the interior is very nicely designed and gorgeous, and your decks fit very well in it. And trust me when I say I'm getting a little bit less precious about how nice these deck boxes are, and I'm traveling with them a little bit more. Because for what it's worth, what I've been doing is I've been putting decks I really love in these deck boxes and then only playing them at home. And now they're venturing out into the world because I really
new
I
con
mean,
boxes for
I
me.
Love the decks.
These are ready
the
to deck- go for Atlanta, y'all.
Yes.
These are ready to go.
The freshly baked.
Freshly baked, ready to go
freshly
for Atlanta.
Freshly baked is really one of their crowning achievements on the Bone Box game. So boneboxgames.com, get your Bone Box merch, get your Bone Box gear, boneboxgames.com. Discount code BOLCAST, baby. Get into it. Make sure you get that stuff. And you know what? When you buy something from them, leave a little note saying, hey, Evan, Jesse, you guys are sweet, sweet angels. Because they are. They're such fun sweetie pies, and I love them so much. So shout out to Bone Box Games as well. So that's sponsors. Okay? Shout out to that listener who wants us to have hard lines and like time codes to skip over that, this is for you. Now we're going to talk about where you could find us before we get into the mailbag, so we can shut it down real quick after. I'm Mike Carrozza, M-I-K-E-C-A-R-R-O-Z-Z-A on Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky, all that good stuff. You can find us also at Am I the Bullcast on Blue Sky as well. You just use my Linktree/Mike Carrozza. You'll find dates and deets to comedy stuff, my comedy albums, some videos, and of course, this podcast. Tell folks that you listen. Tell them that you like it. You know, get more people on board. And also, submit your stories to amithebolus@gmail.com, because we read those, and we're going to read one today. So it's very important for you to do that, and we really appreciate those who do and when you do. So thank you so much to our listeners who submit those stories, because without you, there's no column, there's no podcast, and I appreciate you. Morgan, where can people find you? What do you want them to check out for
I am stuck on Blue Sky at Indigo Gentleman, and you can check out all the cool stuff that our writers do at EDH Rec every single day, Monday through Friday, at the EDH Rec homepage and our articles section.
Hell yeah, there it is, edhrec.com, and of course, Indigo Gentleman. Let's get into it. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready for
Morgan?
Some mail. I'm ready to dive in.
Okay. I opened one that specifically says one for the mailbag from our pal Tyler Day, a.k.a. Rope Arrow, who, you know, Rope Arrow is an artist based in, I believe, in the East Coast. Sweet, sweet angel Tyler Day. He did a secret lair, if I'm not mistaken. It was a secret lair where it's just he counterbalanced deafening silence and Eldrazi conscription. And then there was a legendary angel, and I forget which one it is. It's Bruna, Light of Alabaster. Anyway, Rope Arrow did some incredible work for that secret lair, and frankly, I think they should bring him back for some more. I've got the deafening silence print on my wall behind me. It looks sick. And I highly recommend you check out his work, buy some stuff, and deck out your place with his art.
Yes.
And now we're going to get into a little story submitted by Tyler. So this is going to be read sight unseen. I'm just going to trust that he didn't say anything f***ed up. Sorry, Ken. All right.
No.
No, he's going to do it. Here we go. Hey, buddy, really like the mailbag episode, and I think I've got another small one that isn't worth a full article, LOL. I'm sure you get the mill question all the time, but I think this scenario is a bit different. Am I the bolus for embracing the archenemy role in my mill deck? And the context is attached, so here we go. I love mill. It's probably my favorite mechanic, being a built-in alternate win con. As a mill-loving West Virginian, when they printed The Wise Mothman, I got emotional. They made a card for me. Anyways, everyone else hates mill. Bracket skill issue, play recursion. And I kept powering down my Mothman deck despite it winning only a single time, which is because, you know, mill isn't very strong. I even cut my Junji Ito Doomsday that I included for being too good, but also it's a massive flavor win if you know any IRL Mothman lore. My deck was eventually non-functional and missing all the cards I actually liked. Despite this, I was still targeted super early by people who vehemently hate mill, usually getting knocked out by like turn six consistently. In response, I recently decided to embrace it and just play the good cards because I'm getting hard targeted. I still run no doublers, very little plus one counter synergy, which I'd argue is the stronger way to build Mothman. I added a single Thoracle Game Changer and two tutors being Fiend Artisan and my boy Doomsday. There's a combo of Mindcrank and Bloodchief Ascension, but it's slow, and I can't really tutor for it, and I'm always clear when I play a combo piece. I think this deck is firmly in bracket 3, and still very rarely wins against a pot of precons. The goal is to gradually mill my opponents, again, no Bruvac or other Dobblers, with Doomsday and Thoracle being a dramatic emergency switch that can save or kill me very late game. It turns out it's hard to get triple black and double blue in a three-color deck. Despite still almost never winning, I still get comments that the deck is too strong, occasionally even calling it CDH. And he put a little ghost emoji with its tongue out. Am I the bolus for shoring up my defenses against a full table? Here's the context that he added. The LGS power level is all over the place and nobody ever really cares because besides Mill, we will all openly evaluate the threats and team up when needed. It's mostly be bracket three upgraded precons, but there's several people playing bracket four big stompy decks that are actually too strong to get a pass for being stompy. Feel free to edit down or not use at all. Just trying to get you some more content. Hope you're doing well. And I sure wish I was in Canada right now. LMAO. Thank you, Tyler Day, Rope Arrow. Okay.
Oh,
you
also sent
the deck list.
Bless. Yeah. Ooh, and the deck list.
Yeah, I got to look at this deck list, and I'll tell you what, it looks fine. Like, it's just...
See, you know what? The whole vibe going through that letter was, it probably seems fine, and then, oh yeah, LGS power levels all over the place, probably like around bracket three and some bracket four stompy decks. It's like, yeah, sounds about average.
Yeah, I mean, I just sent Morgan the link to the deck list, and a lot of thematic picks. Like, you've even got, like, Agent Frank Horrigan, who... is not a mill creature, just as in that precon, right? It's a proliferate.
But we're proliferating those rad counters,
right?
So
that's a mill.
That's
but
galaxy brain,
right? But and there's some proliferate in here because that's what the Mothman does. But it's also kind of like, sure, this isn't like a turbo mill situation. Like you said, no Bruvac, no doublers, a couple tutors, but that's about it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at this and I'm kind of like, it's fine.
I really like that there's some thematic inclusions here. There's a lot of Fallout cards that I'm seeing that, you know, just tickle my fancy as a thematic player.
Right.
And I'll say, if I can, as a quick aside to Mill in general, mm-hmm. Mill used to be probably my favorite mechanic that I always wanted to make work in Standard.
Sure.
And the reason why I got on the mill train was because of one of the best cards printed of all time.
Uh-huh.
One of the best mill cards of all time. One of the best general magic cards of all time, which uh-huh. is Glimpse the Unthinkable.
Ooh, two mana mill.
Card is nuts.
Cards.
I look at the art. Look at the effect. When did that card was originally printed in Dissension, I believe. Okay, so this is like 2005 that this card comes out. Unbeatable.
Yeah,
in my opinion, and I said, you know what? I need to go straight mill in every single format I ever play for the rest of my life because of this card. So I get the attraction, the immediate attraction to mill. One card converted me.
It's so it was printed in Ravnica City of Guilds. And
there we go.
What you should know about Glimpse the Unthinkable is that it was so prevalent at the time in a couple formats that it was shorthanded to one word, which is glimpse. And you know how ubiquitous a card has to be for it to become the single word, or even like a shortened thing like ramp. You know, ramp becomes like common parlance. Glimpse is not something that happens often enough that, like, you know, you see a bunch, but it used to be glimpse. Oh, okay. Gonna glimpse on this turn and that's it. You know, it's like it's not even the full. So that to me is also saying something. One thing I'll say about Tyler's deck before going a little further is that you don't play nearly enough lands. You got to play way more lands. You're not playing nearly enough ramp either, I don't think. So that's my two cents. But there's clearly a bunch of flavor picks in here with a lot of Fallout stuff, like Morgan mentioned. Some real, like, mill all-stars, you know, like, new and old, like Colossal Grave Reaver and Hermit Druid, you know. There's Muldrotha the Gravetide in here, which you of course, expect. Like, there's a bunch of stuff in the deck that you're looking at and you're going, this is pretty standard mill stuff. This is also not too oppressive. This is pretty fine. But let's talk about his submission. So... he's asking, am I the bolus for embracing the archenemy role in my mill deck? Essentially because the context around this is that he plays at his LGS and his mill deck is, you know, one of his favorites and it keeps getting claimed as over the top or too powerful despite it not really being such a turbo mill. Like, just looking at it, it doesn't have any of, like, the really big mill spells. Like, it just has a couple of... like some self mill more than anything. There's no, there isn't like a praying sanity. No, there isn't.
Got a pretty
sanity.
Standard creature stack that I would expect to see in these colors for a deck like this too. So there's a lot of anticipation that I think your opponents could have here if they've played against mill decks before. You kind of expect to see Laboratory Maniac, I'm seeing Feral Ghoul and Fiend Artisan here too. Right. Like, you know, these are all kind of standard staples here for a deck like this.
I'd say the only one that's kind of like, you know, raising my eyebrows a little bit besides Doomsday and Thoracle, you know, that kind of stuff is Hirobi Death's Wail in this deck is, if you don't know Hirobi, it's two black for a 4/4 flying spirit, legendary spirit from Kamigawa days. Whenever a creature becomes a target of a spell or ability, destroy that creature. So it's basically you can't target anything, otherwise it gets destroyed. And the Wise Mothman, that line of text says whenever one or more non-land cards are milled, put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to X target creatures, where X is the number of non-land cards milled this way. Doesn't say creatures you control. So it's basically turning your mill into a bit of a machine gun, which is great tech for anybody looking to be the meanie. And I think this is the kind of card that you're including, and it's being received as like maybe a little strong. But even then, I don't see it as a this deck doesn't strike me as one that I would be too vexed by, I'll tell you that much. But mill in general, yeah. Like, we are both people who could appreciate mill. I used to have a mono blue mill deck that was actually Dimir. It was only hybrid Dimir cards and blue cards allowed in the deck. I mean, and artifacts, of course, like a colorless stuff. But I took that apart recently because I have now a regular Dimir mill deck and a Sultai mill deck, which is like the Master Transcendent, the backup commander to the Wise Mothman. And of course, Lazav Wearer Faces from Murders at Karlov Manor, which I still maintain is a pretty good set. Okay, I've got two of my favorite commanders from that set, and I'm not going to lie, the restrictions have made me feel really good about them. Taysa Opulent Oligarch and Lazav Wearer Faces both come out, do their thing. They're innocuous enough that the board isn't any of the wiser, that they are absolutely integral to the entire deck. Like, they need to be there. And yet people don't touch them. You know, because they're underestimated. They're from a set that is so oddly maligned. And people are just like, all the values wrapped up in the Surveil lands. Yeah, for now. But I think there's so much more to that set. And I urge you to go through that file and look through it again. That's just a Murder at Karlov. Murder at Karlov Manor appreciation chat. But that said, I used to have a mono blue mill deck where the whole thing was mill, mill, mill. We're doing every really good mill card is in there. Every really bad mill card that I enjoy, like Keening Stone, is also in there. You know, I did have Bruvac the Grandiloquent in there to double up the mills. I didn't care. It was just cool. Like, the deck was fine. Yeah. It never won because people hated getting milled. But as a graveyard player, I love to see a mill deck at the table. You're telling me you get to advance my game plan by advancing yours? What are we, pals? Hell yeah.
You better believe it.
I just think it's yeah.
Mill is just one of those, I think, iconic alt win conditions that just feels good. It feels good because it feels like you have a chance against it. It feels like almost like the game turning into a game, right? Like, okay, now I got a clock because this guy's coming after me, right? Like, maybe that's less of an issue in Commander because you have more opponents. But I mean, I remember back playing dual Commander, it was like, oh crap, I gotta like get my stuff together if I'm gonna figure out, like, you know, there goes half my deck. Oh, like, what am I gonna do? Like, it's so iconic and fun to me to play and to play against, in my opinion, because it doesn't feel like I'm getting steamrolled by mill ever, even when take out a chunk of half the deck. Like, well, guess what? Maybe that whole half, God knows it was all lands, right? Like, okay, how am I gonna fix this in the next little bit here? And you can kind of see, you can kind of tell, you can kind of feel when mill is getting the best of you versus you're kind of getting blown out by somebody's like insane extra combat trick, Aikido situation. So I think that's what also makes it fun is that you can kind of anticipate it a bit more. And I think that's why it's not good, frankly.
Right.
Because any kind of win condition like that where it's like, okay, I'm on like a clock here of two, three turns, gives you that much more of an advantage as the opponent playing against that deck to fix yourself against it. Right. So, but it's still fun because when you get a win off mill, you know, it's just like, well, you know, clock ran out, deck ran out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't see anything bad here for any party in my opinion, based on my experience.
Yeah. We talk about mill with Chris from the Commander Mechanic. That's an episode to go back and listen to because Chris brings up a lot of great points. Like, mill could have easily been back when Magic was being made and they encountered in playtesting the first time somebody ran out of cards. They could have just decided, okay, well, now you don't draw a card and you keep going until you lose. And instead they were like, well, I don't know, the game's got to end there, right? You're out of cards. You can't do a fundamental step in the game. Yeah, when you go to draw, you lose. If you can't draw a card, then you're done. You know, that's it. And that became like tech later on, right? That's something that people ended up forcing as a win con rather than like a loss condition, like that was kind of incidental, if anything. And now it's honestly a beloved strategy by people. Like newer players, they find out about the alt win and they go, oh, okay, so I could do this. And that's why you see some newer players get into doing a mill deck, or you find some people being like, well, what if I mill and then I could use their deck as a resource? Like there's so many ways to go around
Ashiok,
it. And get
hello?
About it. Yeah.
Hello.
Hello. not to mention, of course, like if you're milling stuff, you're getting rid of some stuff, you're putting it in the graveyard, so it's a little out of reach, but you run the risk of putting it right into their hands. Like sometimes decks are built to return cards to their hands, and you know, you're just supplying that to them. Or even, you know, even if you're not seeing those cards, you're seeing those cards, so you have a little bit of information of like what's left in your deck. And but I do
anticipation,
think that,
right?
Yeah, I do think that it forces you to kind of be like, okay, well, I know my deck, I need to remember what's still in there and what I can draw into and make those plans for that event. And you know, playing against mill is not something that I'm mad at unless it's like so much all at once, you know, unless it's an immediate like I can't stand
immediately
it like,
hellbent. I've got 10 glimpses in my hand somehow and they're all happening at once.
Yeah, or it's just immediately like, hey, I played Bruvac and Traumatize and that's game for you, and I play Mystic Sanctuary, I'm gonna get the Traumatize back, that means next turn one of the other guys is gone. Guess what? I have a, you know, Vedalken Orrery.
See, there's no Traumatize in this deck, even.
No,
so
there
I mean,
isn't.
Like, come on, this is like bracket one milled deck. I'm just kidding, but
I mean,
you know,
the only...
again, like, yeah, that iconic spells there that maybe would make you a little mad. Something like Traumatize is like, all right, buddy, come on.
Well, the
that
the
one
only
hurts
one that's like a doubler is Fraying Sanity, and Fraying Sanity is like a curse on one player that says at the beginning of each end step they mill what they've already milled. You know what I mean? So they double mill, but that's one player for the amount that they've already been milled. And there's no like mill half your deck here. There's none of that. You know, it's just kind of you're going with like, you know, obviously if you're looking at this deck list and you're saying, what are the big mill pieces? You're going, well, it's got to have Altar of the Brood. Okay, it's in here. Mindcrank is in here, which means any damage. So if you lose life off of the rad counters, then you're milling an extra card, right? So that too. If you've got Mesmeric Orb, which is in here. So there are some, like, the big mill stuff is still in here to an extent. You've got those three artifacts, which do a lot. Then, of course, you've got, you know, the rad counter stuff from the commander, you know? And then I'm looking at the rad counters, just in general.
I think that this is a great example of, like, a mill deck that balances, like, the mill part with the rad counter part being a component of that, right? Like, it's not just straight, like, hard mill. Like, let's do some rad counter shenanigans. Let's have some cool creatures with some cool effects that interact with that mill action versus just, like, this is something that's going to steamroll everybody it comes across. And I like that about this. Frankly, I want to play against this deck, to be perfectly honest with you. I want to play against it, and I want to play with it. That's
right.
That's my
so
two cents.
I would like to see this in action to kind of understand where people were coming from, because now that I'm piecing it together, there are a lot of rad counter cards. There are also a couple proliferate cards. So I guess Frank Horrigan is a little bit more useful than I thought he was initially. You know, ETBs end attacks proliferate twice. Yeah, I mean, like...
Yeah, he's a big nasty, but...
But again, that's just two more rad counters, and like rad counters are milling and dealing damage. So, you know, honestly, it's tough to really fully evaluate it, but as far as mill decks go, this feels like an upgraded precon. This is there are so many cards from the Fallout pre-con that haven't left the deck. And even then, there's some cards in here that I'm kind of like, I don't know if this is up to snuff anymore. You know, it's these are clearly like some flavor inclusions. Some cards are like, you know, definitely like, hey, I'm building the Mothman deck, so obviously I'm going to keep a couple of the rad bugs in here. Like, yeah, sure. You know, there's stuff like the Mind Skinner, which if a source you control would deal damage to an opponent, prevent that damage, and each opponent mills that many cards. Yeah, it turns like your deck from going
delicious
commander damage into continuing the mill theme. You know, I don't see it. Personally, like I get that, you know, there's a couple of things that maybe could go hard. Like I'm just like, I know the water crystal means that every mill is actually five cards, and that goes crazy, like an Altar of the Brood, and you play anything that makes a token when something gets milled, like a Sidisi Brood Tyrant, you know? But that's into your graveyard. Is Zelix the same thing? Okay, Zelix is different. So that would keep the thing flowing.
I want to know who these folks are to explain their answer as to why they think this could potentially be a CEDH deck. Because I think what's happening here
is crazy.
At the LGS is that we were talking about this in one of our previous calls, where this deck had what, like a, I think a total like 30% win rate across like these 30 games or something, right? Like something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are like, oh, this deck is like crazy overpowered and like blah, blah, blah. And like, there is a difference between a deck being quote unquote strong / overpowered / CEDH versus, hey, guess what? I just managed to go off because I drew all the stuff I needed and nobody interacted with my things and everything's working out perfectly. Like, maybe that's what's happening here. I think it is, to be honest.
I mean, that's the other thing is, like, literally the Doomsday Pile is a Thassa's Oracle game win or a Lab Maniac combo win, or Jace Wielder of Mysteries isn't even in the deck proper. It's in the maybe board. And I think
maybe
it's
board,
like, it makes sense because if you're tutoring for that and that's like the way to win, that's the way to win. And, you know, it is what it is. It's not my favorite way to do things, but I can't get mad at you if you are getting stomped out turn six just because people hate mill.
Yep.
I think what it is, it's like, I guess the one thing that I can see is like, maybe people aren't playing enough lands. Like, because if I'm playing against mill, if I'm playing against mill and I have a deck that doesn't have the appropriate amount of resources in the deck, then seeing them hit the graveyard is a little rough because it's like, oh, I keep hoping for one of my like 40% of my deck is mill, or is not mill, is ramp or lands, you know, and I keep hoping that I get one of those things to do it. And then I keep getting that milled and, you know, but then that's just the strategy working for somebody at this moment.
Yeah. Again,
the opposite is like you get flooded because all your other stuff is being milled. But, you know, if you're up against the mill deck so regularly, do you know how many cards shuffled your library, your graveyard back into your library?
Like, I don't mean to laugh, but it really just, goes back to my first point of like, that's why mill is good and not good, is just this attitude of anticipation that you get when you know you're playing against a mill deck. Like, you can figure it out, folks, I promise, especially if it's the same type of mill deck like this, that maybe has a little more rad counter heavy strategy versus like just hard focus mill. Like, you can play around both of those things pretty easily, even with staples, with fun cute cards. You know, Mike, like you said, you're playing against this deck regularly. Like, I mean, how hard can it be to kind of like telescope your way through this and just kind of see what's happening? Like, other than like, we're just dealing with variance. That's showbiz, baby. Sometimes you mill 30 lands, sometimes you mill 30 spells, and all you got left is lands. I mean, that doesn't mean the deck is good. It really doesn't. It's a component of the deck doing good things, but it doesn't make the deck good. That's just showbiz, baby.
And that said, it's like, I just looked up how many cards shuffle graveyards into the library, and I guess my Scryfall query isn't super specific because I'm getting like just regular tutor stuff in here, like the Planeswalker searches from like the Planeswalker pre-con deck for super beginners, but like, you know, and I'm not about to suggest anybody play Archangel's Light from what was it? Dark Ascension, that mythic rare that people look at and go, wow, I can't believe this is a mythic. It's an 8-mana sorcery that says you gain 2 life for each card in your graveyard, then shuffle your graveyard into your library. Like, no one's saying play that. But like Blightsteel Colossus or Darksteel Colossus are also ways to get your graveyard into your, like, the there's the shuffle Eldrazi's, like Ulamog and Kozilek both hit the bin the yard and put your library back into your graveyard. Like, I know that the Colossus, they get shuffled in, but I, you know what? They are the only ones that get shuffled in, so you end up drawing it the next turn. But I guess at that point, if you have a Blightsteel, who cares? You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, Ulamog, the Infinite Gyre, and Kozilek, Ceaseless Hunger, is that? Butcher of Truth. Shuffle the graveyard into the library altogether, just fully. And then there's stuff like Campfire isn't a bad artifact to have. Like, depending on your deck, it might actually be, like, a fine way to do some life gain. And if you have trouble with your commander always getting removed, then you have a bailout thing that says 2-tap, exile Campfire, put all commanders you own from the command zone and from your graveyard into your hand, then shuffle your graveyard into your library. That's not even, like, that's not even talking about, like, Blessed Respite, which is a fog that shuffles target player's graveyard into their library. There's the memory part of Commit to Memory in from the graveyard. You've got Echo of Eons, which is similar. Elixir of Immortality is, like, one of the OG ways to
iconic.
Do this.
Yeah.
Like, the Gaia's Blessing, talk about an OG, like, truly one of the most OG ones. But, like, there are many ways to shuffle your graveyard back into your library, and in a way that gets it for free is going to be like Kozilek and Ulamog or something, but
or off like the mill. Yeah
But that's it. So it's like even Nexus of Fate gets shuffled into your library every turn, and so if that gets milled, that becomes your library. You draw a card. Okay, it's Nexus of Fate. Gonna take an extra turn now. Oh, look at that. I draw a card. It's Nexus of Fate. Gonna take an extra turn now. You know what I mean? It's like there's a couple ways to, like, bypass this. And if this is something that you deal with regularly enough that you see someone's deck hit the table and you go, oh my God, another a mill deck. We better get rid of it. Oh my God.
And it's nobody's ever said that ever. It's so funny because, yeah, like the way you said that, I know you were being very real with it. But, like, nobody's ever said that.
No, but that's the thing. I disagree. I disagree. There are people who've said that. I think there are people who have said,
but I guess,
oh, no,
I guess I'm just,
I hate it.
Yeah. I guess I'm just being silly because,
for sure,
you know, I'm biased. I'm so biased, y'all. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can tell, right? Like, coming out of Glimpse the Unthinkable is like, you know, I will sacrifice at the altar of Glimpse here forever for the remainder of my life. Mm-hmm. I love Mill, but it's the most iconic and fun strategy because it is easy to work around. It is so easy to work around. Like, we just went through the whole last 10 minutes, y'all. I mean, what do we think is the biggest problem here, right? Who are the people who say this is CEDH? I'm still, like, tripping on it.
That is nuts. What's also bothering me is that, like, Mill is a strategy that turns 40 life into 100 for each player, like, each opponent.
Yeah.
It actively is making it more difficult for you. And when, you know, you've got the Mind Skinner, which prevents damage and turns that into mill for everybody. That's also, like, more deliberately and more directly transforming your damage that is supposed to be, like, for it to matter, is going to be huge. And then you're turning it into whatever. You know what I mean? It's not that big a deal. You know, so to me, it's also like, I don't know. There's this weird mental game that happens with people who just think, I don't like this, and I don't like seeing my cards in the graveyard because it means that they're gone and they're lost. And then they neglect the fact that they have an entire library. You know, and then, again, this is something we discussed with Chris, the commander mechanic, on an episode. And I think that he nailed it. He's got a bunch of good reasons to enjoy Mill, and one of his reasons is a little tongue-in-cheek, but I agree. Is like, you'll get to see your whole deck. And isn't that nice? You know what I mean? Like, there's something to the idea of, like, whenever I mill myself out completely, you know, using whatever self-mill stuff that I'm doing, I still get to be like, wow, I can't believe I did that. You know, whoops. Hey, look, this deck is crazy. You know what I mean?
And really, like you were saying earlier, with all these options to get stuff from your graveyard to your library, I mean, your graveyard is basically your second library, y'all. And I mean, if you're the type of person where you're seeing these mill decks a lot at your LGS, my first response would be, all right, it's time to make a graveyard deck. It's time to make something where, you know, I'm going up against this mill deck and we're having a real battle of wits here.
I'll tell you what, you don't even need to make a graveyard deck to benefit from somebody playing mill at the table. There's E-Wit, and like even better, there's Timeless Witness, which you can cast from your graveyard to get into play to bring something back. Like you're embalming it or eternalizing it. I forget which one it is. Either way, like you can cast it from your graveyard to get any card from your graveyard. You can eternalize it from your graveyard to get any card at all. That and it's yep. basically like, yeah, you got a big hand now. You know what I mean? Like, also, not for nothing, if you're playing in black and you're not running like one reanimation spell, I will just say you gotta trust your boy when I say play a reanimation spell willy-nilly. I think you'll enjoy what happens because you've got more options than you think or notice. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think you're the bolus for like shoring up your weaknesses against the rest of the table and kind of showing them like, hey, if you're gonna treat me like the arch enemy, then I guess I'm gonna play like one. Like, I think you were conscious in the way that you built this deck and decided that you didn't want certain things in it, and you've kept to that, and yet you were still targeted like you weren't. So, yeah, I don't think that's quite fair. And frankly, it's just like a literal, I think it's it indicates that within the group or the people that you end up playing with, there's no real understanding of like, hey, mill isn't like the worst thing to be playing against. Like, I would hate to see an army of creatures instead of a mill deck. Like, if I saw something like a green deck ramping like crazy, I would be more afraid of that than the mill deck, because that green deck's going to crater hoof before I even come close to a
before
mill
you can blink.
Win. Yeah. Before you can glimpse. You know what I mean?
Like, that's right. That's right.
So, yeah, to me, this is kind of like, whatever. You're fine. Like, I don't think you're the bolus in any way. I think if they're going to treat you like the villain and you told them like, hey, I've done all of this and now you guys are whatever, so I'm just going to do that. That's it. A 2-card infinite combo that's slow. Sure. Got it.
Yeah.
I understand. Not my favorite way to play personally. It's not like a thing that I like. I don't like tutors. I don't like 2-card infinites. I tend to shy away from those. And you've got a couple of that. Like those in the deck, and I think that comes from the fact that they're already accusing you of CDH when the list is not that.
There's no game changers in this guy, right?
No, there are. I think Doomsday is one. Thoracle is a game changer.
Right. I forgot Thoracle.
Yeah, and I'm blanking on if there's another one in here, but I know that those two are game changers, and then that automatically qualifies it for 3. I think that the synergy in this deck is pretty high, and there are a couple, like, you know, there aren't many tutors, but there are a couple. So that does put it in the bracket 3 minimum. And I would say it's possible that people consider it bracket 4, but CDH is just out of the question. There's like no counter spells in this deck. There's some protection, but there's
you got to drown in the lock, you guys. Yeah. Like,
that's the only one. You don't even have, this is how bad I don't
No,
play.
I'm so sorry. We have like an actual counter spell though.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's two. How many?
No, but I'm trying to remember Fierce Guardianship is what I'm talking about. Fierce Guardianship, Force of Will, Force of Negation.
Something crazy. Playing,
yeah. You don't have those in your deck. The CDH, this deck is not a CDH deck. A CDH deck playing Agent Frank Horrigan? Not my CDH. All right, Bloatfy Swarm in CDH? Yeah, I don't think so. There's a lot of these cards that like glowing one, does not go in a CDH deck. Like, there's nothing about this deck that feels like CDH to me. And I think
that it just feels like a deck that can go off. And, yeah. and that's where the disconnect is with y'all at the LGS. Like, and there is a difference between powerful out the gate and
yes.
things just went my way. Two different
things.
At
the end of the day, a bracket three deck is a deck that's capable of going off. Does mm-hmm. it go off every time? No. But
no.
can it get there? Yeah, because it's built with some synergy. That's what bracket yeah. three entails. It's not going to go off like, here's a two-card combo, here's a bunch of extra turn spells, all that. It's going to put something together, and this is where the kind of deck that I like to build lives. It's going to put something together that's going to require a bunch of pieces. It's disruptible, and mm-hmm. you're going to be able to, you know, interrupt and take me out, but I'm going to have some stuff that works together, and that's going to be that, you know?
Yep.
And I will, if I get to a certain point unchecked, or if I fight my way through something and I do get my, like, five-piece combo off, that took work. It didn't just happen, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And if it did just happen, then I got really lucky. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's the end of the day.
And that's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
The discontinuity when you have a bunch of pieces that end up working together and maybe it gets disrupted. Maybe one of my things gets countered, but I can do something else because the cards are so synergistic, right? Like I'm not just losing my combo forever and now my deck is dead, right?
Oh,
like it's still just like, okay, here's some more. Maybe it takes me a couple extra turns to catch up.
That's
and
it.
If somebody else isn't just steamrolling us, then, you know, we're good to go. Those are the fun games of Magic, right? If you want to play CEDH, like you're probably playing like 10 games in 5 minutes, I would guess, right? So it's a completely different versus like, okay, Mikey, we're sitting down here for the next 3 hours and like, maybe we're going to play one game that 3 hours.
Yeah, maybe
you ain't
two,
doing
hopefully.
That with CEDH, my friends. Yeah.
Yeah. A good, honestly, ideal game, 90 minutes. Ooh, it's like a movie. You know what I mean?
It's like a horror ideally. Movie. Yeah. That 90 minute. Mwah.
Yeah, let me get the whole story in. Let's have a second. Let's double feature. 3 hour game is kind of like if anybody board wipes right now, I'm gonna scream. You know what I mean?
Funny, it happens though.
And I know it does plenty. But CDH is kind of looking at turns like, yeah, hey, all right, turn two, we've already got a stack war going, you know, and that's not what this deck is capable of, and it's not a CDH deck, and so those CDH comments are just completely unfounded. There are some combo pieces. There's two combos in the deck that end a game, and there's some powerful stuff in it, and that's that. It's just, it's a fine mill deck that doesn't even like I bet you get taken out by the rad counters dealing damage to you more often than the mill.
Yeah.
And that's,
oh yeah,
that's, you know, that's that. Honestly, I just don't see it. I don't see why people are giving you such a hard time with this deck, and I don't think you're the bolus in this case for the deck or for leaning into just, hey, I want to make this deck and I'm going to play it. So that's that, dude. I not the bolus.
I totally agree. Not the bolus. And this whole time I keep talking about, and I think we're talking about the power level of the deck not being, you know, CEDH level or super strong. And that is not a dig at the deck, by the way, y'all.
No.
Like, we're looking at this deck and we've been looking at this deck list throughout this whole call. Okay, and like, this looks fun as heck. Like I said in the beginning, like I want to play this and I want to play against it. Okay, but those are the kind of decks that we like, right? Like, and I don't disparage anybody who plays CEDH. It's a different kind of game. So if you're into that, please do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you don't want to like go throwing something like that, a label like that around to a deck like this just because maybe you misunderstand power level or you misunderstand how the win conditions work or maybe your deck needs work, right? This deck looks fun as hell, y'all. Okay?
I agree.
Like, we need to put the deck list up in this description here, and I'm sure we will. But
sure.
I mean, take a look at this, and if anybody says this is CEDH, y'all need to write
that's
in
crazy.
And like defend your answer here. Okay, maybe
yeah,
maybe tell one of your LGS folk, like, okay, give us an essay. We'll give you some money, right? Like, we'll put it up on EDH Rack if you can convince us that this is CEDH worthy. That's right. That's right. We'll figure it out. We'll figure something out. We want your opinions.
Send it to amithebolus@gmail.com with the subject line, Rope Arrow's deck is CDH. Okay?
Yeah.
And
we want to hear you.
Yeah, we do want to hear from you. I will say, looking at this deck, hopefully, okay, so Tyler, you're going to have to keep this deck as is on the site and like clone it wherever on this site that you're building with. Clone it there and then you know, tinker with it in that other one. But this link will still be the same for us. I will say, Tyler, I know you're listening. You submitted. I'm gonna tell you what I have to say about this. More lands. You need so many more lands. You're playing six. You're playing six as a creature that gives all your permanent cards retrace. Permanent cards in your graveyard have retrace. Come on now.
See, be careful though, because those lands are gonna take them into CEDH territory.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing CEDH deck's gonna about be cracked. This is that the land count is lower than it should be.
Yep. So be careful. Be careful, y'all. Brew at your own risk.
Tyler Day, a.k.a. Rope Arrow, not the Bolas. And that's official.
True Eugene.
True Eugene, baby. We're going to dip out of here. We're going to tell you, hey, we did the sponsor stuff off the top. Make sure to use our referral link in the description, cardsphere.com. Cardsphere, get your cards here. Boneboxgames.com. Get your Bone Box merch, accessories, products, everything. Discount code BOLCAST for a little something off the top, baby. And then don't forget to follow us online. My link tree is in the description / Mike Carrozza, MikeCarrozza at Indigo Gentleman for Morgan on Blue Sky and EDHREC.com for the Am I the Bolas column. I can't thank you guys enough for writing in, and I appreciate you. Please send in more submissions to Am I the Bolas at gmail.com. And that'll do it. Anything you want to say before we scoot the day here, Morgan?
You're ready for the day to be scooted? I can take me a nap. I'm gonna mill off the top of my brain here and take a nap.
Yeah, let's mill off the top of our brains and take a nap. Later, gang. It's time to scoot this day. Bye-bye.